Mrs. Eddy by Hugh Stoddard Kennedy. Chapter 38. The Building of the Church. The building of the original Mother Church edifice, like so much else in the history of the Christian Science movement, presents, on the surface, a picture of conflict, clearly demanding for its resolution the understanding of motives and purposes not apparent to the casual observer. No more satisfying objective could well be imagined, if traditional views are to be accepted, than the project, advanced and expanded in successive issues of the Christian Science Journal by the Board of Directors, for the building of a permanent home for the church in Boston. So it was accepted by Christian Scientists everywhere. Those who had had their original contributions returned to them now sent them back again to Boston, often doubled or trebled. In order that the work might go forward more rapidly, some 40 of Mrs. Eddy's students were asked to contribute $1,000 immediately. Mrs. Eddy made the request, and yet it is clear from letters and statements about this time that her great concern was to turn the thoughts of her students and followers away from what they were doing in the matter of material achievement to its spiritual significance. The louder and more exultant grew the rejoicing, the more surely did Mrs. Eddy come out with some reminder that what they were doing amounted to very little, if anything, in comparison with what they were thinking. Thus, the issue of the journal for March 1892 might well have been regarded as a church building number. It contained the architect's plans for the proposed Mother Church building and publishing house, a full list to date of subscribers to the building fund, a poem by Adelaide Proctor on giving, and a vigorous editorial dealing with the whole question of church and church building. The issue was pervaded by enthusiasm and evidently designed to arouse Christian Scientists everywhere to renewed effort. It might reasonably be expected that Mrs. Eddy would have placed herself unequivocally in the forefront of this appeal and used her immense influence to supplement the efforts of the trustees. Instead, she uses this issue of the journal to emphasize the fact that the whole enterprise has no other basis than that of "suffer it to be so now." "It is not indispensable," she wrote, "to organize materially Christ's church. It is not absolutely necessary to ordain pastors and to dedicate churches. But if this be done, let it be in concession to the period and not as a perpetual or indispensable ceremonial of the church. If our church is organized, it is to meet the demand, suffer it to be so now. The real Christian compact is love for one another. This bond is wholly spiritual and inviolate." Nothing, however, could lessen the enthusiasm of Christian Scientists everywhere. Neither did Mrs. Eddy seek in any way to lessen it. That was quite clearly not at all her purpose. She never failed to express her appreciation of what was being done. And when a fund was started by the children to furnish and decorate the suite of rooms which were being planned for her in the tower of the church, it seems to have touched her deeply. She was, however, firmly determined that the substance should not be lost in the shadow. The cornerstone of the new building was laid on May 21, 1894. And in the course of her address, Mrs. Eddy once again emphasized the same point. Nevertheless, it is possible to read into what she said on this occasion a more satisfied sense that what they were doing had to be done and should be done at that particular time. The church, she said, more than any other institution at present, is the cement of society, and it should be the bulwark of civil and religious liberty. But the time cometh when the religious element, or Church of Christ, shall exist alone in the affections, and need no organization to express it. Till then, this form of godliness seems as requisite to manifest its spirit as individuality to express soul and substance. There was much else, of course, in the address. It was a joyful, happy gathering, and Mrs. Eddy made it clear that she thought it was so. She briefly went over the story of the building as it had progressed and was to progress, spoke of the donations that had come in from all over the world so promptly and gratefully, of the children's fund, and of the many letters she had received. She then went on to tell of how the stone, granite, for the building was coming from her native New Hampshire, and of how that day they were laying away under the foundation stone the names of all those who had subscribed to the building fund in your own handwriting, together with a copy of the Bible and Science and Health. The ceremony, as described later in the June issue of the journal, was of the simplest character. It consisted of silent prayer and the audible repetition in unison of the Lord's Prayer by the Christian Science Board of Directors, thus quietly fulfilling the scripture, "His voice was not heard in the street." And thus, unostentatiously, was consummated the laying of our cornerstone, the type of that stone which of old the builders rejected, but which is become the head of the corner. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. As evidence of the watchfulness and faithfulness of those having immediate charge of the matter, the account went on to say, "We deem it but just to state that through three consecutive stormy nights, two trusted students, James A. Neal and Thomas W. Harton, watched the stone with its precious contents. This was made necessary by certain delays which prevented, for the time being, the final completion of a part of the mechanical work." Referring in conclusion to the ease and rapidity with which the necessary funds had been raised, the account says, with an analogy almost approaching the miracle of the master in bringing out of the mouth of a fish the money with which to pay tribute, the large sum of money referred to in the address rolled into the treasurer's hands in prompt response to the leader's simple call. No doubt, if the history associated with the demonstration of these respective sums were known, it would make a chapter which would amaze even the most credulous. Some 6 months later, namely on January 6, 1895, the new church was dedicated. The final cost of the building was something over $250,000. The dedication of the original Mother Church in Boston served, as nothing else could have done, to focus public attention on a movement vaguely realized for many years, but now suddenly taking shape as a national institution. Practically every newspaper in the United States of any importance, and many abroad, carried long descriptions of the new church and the dedication ceremonies, while the story of Mrs. Eddy's life and the movement of which she was the recognized leader was given prominent place both in the newspapers and magazines. What seemed to impress the general thought most was that, in spite of the fact that the dedication ceremonies were held in the depth of winter, when Boston is almost surely frostbound and snowbound, thousands of Christian Scientists traveled from all over the country, and often from beyond its borders, to attend the opening ceremonies. The Boston newspapers especially, all too familiar with their own climate at that time of the year, found it hard to understand such enthusiasm. Surging crowds of Christian Scientists, said the Boston Globe, from all parts of the United States, poured in and out of the new edifice. More than 6,000 of the faithful worshipped in the beautiful temple and participated in the dedicatory exercises. The cars were loaded all day, and the church was the center of attraction to the travel. It was interesting to watch the people stand in the cold, with the snow beating down upon them, gazing with loving eyes at their beautiful temple. The New York Sun, after referring to the fact that it was necessary to hold 5 services in order to accommodate all those who wanted to attend, went on to relate how Mrs. Eddy had announced her intention of being absent on the occasion, and sent a communication ordaining the Bible and Science and Health as the rightful pastor of the church. The first service, as described in the journal's account of the matter, began promptly at 9 o'clock a.m. and was attended largely by the local congregation, for whose accommodation it was specially given. Another was held at 10:30 a.m., another at 12 midday, another at 1:30 p.m., and the last one at 3 o'clock p.m. The same order was repeated at each service, except the second at which the children who had contributed the funds for the building and furnishing of the mother's room were present in a body. Mrs. Eddy, as has been noted, was not there, but she sent a dedicatory address which was read at all the services. It is, in many ways, a remarkable document, chiefly because of its restraint. There is, it is true, running through it a quiet note of triumph. No longer are we of the church militant, but of the church triumphant. And with Job of old we exclaim, "Yet in my flesh shall I see God." But for the most part, she is, as usual, concerned with turning the thoughts of her auditors away from the outward and visible to the inward and spiritual. There is a thought higher and deeper than the edifice. Material light and shade are temporal, not eternal. Nevertheless, she allows herself to look backwards and retraverse some of the path, often stony enough, by which she had reached that day an occasion. The persecution and derision of the early days, the encouragement of such men as Bronson Alcott, who had been her friend, and Wendell Phillips, who had said, "Had I young blood in my veins, I would help that woman." And the steady winning of the way by her book, Science and Health. And so she came to a concluding prayer or invocation, the effect of which, in the circumstances, may well have been remarkable. Divine Presence, breathe Thou Thy blessing on every heart in this house. Speak out, O soul. This is the newborn of spirit. This is his redeemed. This his beloved. May the kingdom of God within you, with you always, reascending, bear you outward, upward, heavenward. May the sweet song of silver-throated singers, making melody more real, and the organ's voice as the sound of many waters, and the word spoken in this sacred temple, dedicated to the ever-present God, mingle with the joy of angels and rehearse your heart's holy intents. May all whose means, energies, and prayers helped erect the Mother Church find within it home and heaven. So, as the world would view it, was a great work completed. But Mary Baker Eddy was far from sharing the world's view. For her, the work had only just begun. She accorded what had been done no more than a passing glance. It was fully 3 months after the dedication of her church before she took time to make the journey to Boston in order to see it. Apparently, she viewed with misgiving the flood of personal adulation and publicity the whole episode had evoked. And it is evident from her letters about this time that she was casting around in ever-increasing doubt for some means of saving for herself some small measure of that peace and quiet for which she greatly longed, and which she greatly needed. It is quite evident that the woman, about this time, was literally thronged. The more earnestly she strove to safeguard her movement from alien teaching, the more inevitably was she called upon to settle questions of doctrine and give her endorsement to what conformed. She was nothing if not plain-spoken in the matter. Some of her public statements are veritable whips of thongs which she laid about her, quite regardless, apparently, of consequences. Thus, in the very issue of the journal describing the laying of the cornerstone, in fact, on the very next page to the rather fulsome account of the matter, she has a statement under the title, "Take Notice," which leaves no doubt as to her meaning. "I hereby state publicly and positively that until I advertise through these pages or send special requests to individuals to the contrary of this statement, I shall not receive a call from anyone, nor read letters, manuscripts, etc., which I have not myself first solicited. I advertise this after waiting over 2 years for sufficient time of my own to arrange my writing desk, and while having on hand packages of sermons with request that I examine them, other people's correspondence to read, heaps of manuscripts sent for approval, pyramids of letters requiring immediate answers, tiered columns of applications to call on me, business letters innumerable, etc. My work for the Mother Church is done. And be it remembered that 5 years ago I came to Concord, New Hampshire, for the purpose of retirement. If I know myself, this is my sole desire, that all whom I have taught Christian Science, and all its teachers and its students, by whomsoever taught, yes, that all mankind shall have one shepherd, and he shall gather them into his fold, unto himself, divine love. Mary Baker Eddy." With individuals seeking an interview, whom maybe she would have been glad to see, but simply could not from lack of time, Mrs. Eddy was less emphatic. But there was always, as in the notice above, attached to her most vitriolic utterances, a revealing note of kindness which softened the blow, and, as many later testified, served to open their eyes to their own lack of consideration and failure to do their own work. Thus, in one of her letters, evidently dealing with some such situation, Mrs. Eddy says, "I cannot and do not receive visits any more from anyone but from those who come at my request to help me or who are my students. This, dear one, is the reason. That is, I have so much writing and care as a leader in a cause to which I devote my entire life that I have not time to visit or be visited. Now, this is not because I would not enjoy seeing you, but because I cannot give more than 1 hour to anyone unless it is to work with me in my field of labor. To a friend who had apparently written to her, regretting how seldom she was seen in Boston, Mrs. Eddy replies wearily, "The fact is, I am allowed no earthly peace, and it is this that keeps me from visiting my church oftener." However, the day came when she determined to make the journey and see for herself that about which she had heard and read so much. In her dedication message, she had spoken happily of how sure she was that if she had been there in person, she would have felt like the Queen of Sheba before the treasures of Solomon, and would have to say, like her, that the half had not been told her. But when she did go, she went alone and unannounced. It was on April 1st, 1895. Winter was just giving way to spring, and it was the week before Easter. She had heard that her followers, when she came, were eager to have the chimes rung in the tower and to greet her with flowers. And so she told no one of her plans until the last minute. And then, attended only by one or two of her household, left Concord for Boston. When she arrived, she drove at once to the church, prepared to spend the night in the mother's room in the tower. Her first view of the auditorium was from the door at the end of the center aisle. It was late afternoon, and the light was failing, so she asked that the lights in the auditorium might be turned on. When this was done, she walked up the aisle until she came under the dome. There she stood for a moment, and then, advancing towards the platform, knelt down on the first step. She was 74 now, and her hair, always one of her beauties, was snow white. Clara Shannon, who describes the scene in her recollections, goes on to tell how that after a little while she rose slowly and mounted the platform, going to the desk on the right. There she waited a moment, and then very softly, but quite audibly, repeated the 91st Psalm through to the end. "With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation." She waited again a little while, and then, going over to the other desk, repeated one of her favorite hymns, "Guide me, O thou great Jehovah," through the prayer of the first verse to the quiet affirmation of the second. "Open is the crystal fountain whence the healing waters flow, and the fiery, cloudy pillar leads me all my journeys through. Strong deliverer, still thou art my strength and shield." Next day, it was Sunday morning. She left the church quite early and returned to Concord.